Good morning, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We've had a little bit of volume problems with our audio today. Right, so would you go ahead and state your full name and ADC number for the record at this time, please?
James Siegfried, 055339.
Thank you, sir. You're carrying before the Illinois Board of Executive Clemency this morning in reference to a drill hearing. I'm going to introduce the members of the board that will conduct the hearing today. We have the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who is our board chairman, Honorable Bill Rittenhouse, Honorable Michael Johnson, the Honorable Louis Canones. My name is David Neal, and I'll be the hearing lead. So this hearing is for 12 for you. I'm going to go with some information and verify it with you as we go along. And once we've gone over some of the basics here, then we'll get down to talking and discussing your progress. Okay, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right, so you're 51 at this time?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you're signing four concurrent sentences, which began on October 1st, 1993. There's a 35-year sentence for attempted first-degree murder, a 35-year sentence for first-degree burglary, and two 25-year sentences for aggravated assault. You were convicted by a jury and sentenced to the two 35-year terms, with the two 25-year terms was supposed to be consecutive initially. And on your initial appeal, the sentencing was changed so that all four terms were concurrent. And a second appeal upheld the sentences and the sentencing. Is that correct to this point, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And we became eligible on January 30th, 2017. You were certified for this hearing for regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge on November 13, 2018. You've had four previous hearings before the board and were denied this time.
Negative. Two previous hearings before the board.
Two previous hearings?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, I may have misread the names. Okay. So I'm going to brief summary of the offense. In the early morning of October 2nd, 1993, you went to room 11 of the Prescott boarding house and stabbed the victim several times in the chest in the apparent attempt to kill him. You were then later indicted and then convicted by a jury of the crime. You were 26 years old at that time, sir?
Yes.
Okay, and I also believe that in your sentencing there was a restitution of $13,771.11. And I believe that was to be again after you would be paroled, correct, sir?
The actual number is $15,488.88, sir.
Okay. That's a large sum, but you have the judge said so you don't have to pay any of that until you actually get paroled, correct?
Correct. Okay. Actually, 90 days after release.
90 days after, okay. Either parole or end of sentence. Okay. And is that medical bills or?
I would assume, sir.
Okay.
They didn't actually explain what exactly all the money was for. I think $457 of it was court fees, and the rest of it, I believe, might have been medical expenses.
Okay. All right. So, since you've been in, you've got minimal, or you had minimal criminal history at the time, but you did spend time in a juvenile correction facility. You got pretty good programming, including college courses and an AA degree.
Two AA degrees.
Two AAs? Well, that's good, sir. Very good. I never quite put together a degree. I got quite a few hours, but I never quite put it into a degree. So congratulations. Two, you have good family and community support. There's no one here today, but there's letters and sort of halfway houses that said, so they would accept you upon release. I also don't see any victims' opposition records, and I don't. Well, I thought I got one, but I don't see a letter of objection from the county attorney's office either. So, sir, at this time, I think what I want to do is I want to basically try to review it for a little bit, but I'm going to ask some questions to kind of lead you along. But first off, what was going on? Tell us about what happened when this crime occurred and what was going on in your mind.
You're talking about something that happened 25 years ago. Trying to explain what was going on in my mind is really not. I don't know how doing that could be anything more than further victimizing the victim, folks. Rehashing it over and over and over again. I spent 10 years, first 10 years of my incarceration, once a week talking about it with the psychiatrist here at the facility. The rehashing it constantly just, to me, just doesn't do anything but further victimize.
Well, it's a little hard for the board to really get to know you and figure out whether you've improved for the time that you've been in prison if we don't know anything more than that about what was going on. I mean, I don't expect 25 years after the fact that you could tell us exactly what you were thinking or anything else, but, you know, a general idea of what was going on in your life. What do you think? Why didn't you try to kill the guy? You know, those kind of things. Yeah. I like to, you know, as one of the voting government, I like to, I would expect details down to the number of times somebody was stabbed or hit or anything else like that. I mean, to give an idea, what would prompt you to go in somebody's room and start whacking on with a knife?
I felt I had no choice, ladies and gentlemen. There's a whole lot of what happened that night that is not in your records, was never in your records, was never testified about by the victim, was never spoken about by me. I know that Judge Raymond W. Weaver issued two gag orders during my pretrial production, ordering me and my defense counsel not to speak about what we believed were defensive reasons for what happened. I know that both of those motion in limites to suppress and the gag order that followed still are active. And I know that speaking about them puts me in violation of a standing pending court order. I can tell you this much. Mr. Borchowski was not the only victim in this case. There was a six-year-old boy who was a victim. And that six-year-old boy was so disgusted after the events of my trial that he grew up and became an expatriated citizen of the United States, and he will never come back to this country. That little boy is my nephew. He was the other victim in this case.
Okay, so based on what you just said, I don't like to assume things, but the picture that you painted, the way you explained that, was that your nephew was a victim and your crime was more of a retaliation.
Yeah, I would guess you would call it acting in defense of another.
Okay, well, that's what we try to find out, you know, what's going on, why.
I had this discussion 2 years ago with the board, and it wasn't believed. I was actually called a liar out and say I was a liar, but they said that, oh, well, that's not in the record. Well, that record's totally one-sided. Now, part of that's my fault because I listened to my attorney's admonitions to keep my mouth shut. Partly because, I don't know, I grew up in Yavapai County and I know how they handle those kind of situations. They tend to slap those kind of people's hands and send them on their way and let them get away with crap against children. I know this for a fact because as a child in foster care, the same thing happened to me and nobody did anything about it. Does that justify what I did? No. Does any amount of what Mr. Gorchowski did justify what I did? Absolutely not. I violated every moral code I'd ever been taught.
Okay.
I did things that I will never, ever be able to recover from. Whether you guys decide to send me home, whether you send me, you know, keep me here, whether I get to face society with what I've done, or whether I continue to be stuck in this box, nothing I will ever be able to do can ever take back the bad, bad choices that I made.
Okay, sir. I appreciate that you opened up a little bit, but sometimes, even if it's generalities, it's more helpful than when we hit a stone wall and can't find out anything. A lot can be learned from somebody when they, even in general terms, speak about something like that. And there's a lot to be learned from you know, what you said about what you didn't say. So, like I said, I appreciate the fact that you did open up, that there's a lot of questions can come up from that, but also a lot of things can be answered. So let's go to some of the other information here. So your plan would be Milestones Halfway House?
Yes, that's my first option. You know, I'm not a fool. I know going out there is not going to be easy. I know that there are going to be tons of challenges. And the reason that I've chose Milestones is because Milestones is a controlled environment. Milestones is a place where you're constantly under monitor of the administration. Milestones is a place that doesn't allow you to leave the property unless you leave with one of the staff members. It's also a place where you have to dedicate yourself to doing charity, to giving back, and that's what I want to do.
Okay, there's a lot of halfway houses out there. A lot of them are, you know, just halfway houses. A lot of them are really good programs that you know, really, really put some effort into rehabilitation for inmates, make them successful. And it sounds like that's what Milestones is. But the question is it a faith-based halfway house?
Absolutely.
Okay. Very good, very good. There's several out there that we hear and see a lot of. And the faith-based ones, you know, they don't seem to be in it just for money. They seem to be in it to help the inmates reacclimate and become reacclimated tough. And sometimes it's good, especially if you as an inmate that's hoping to get out, you research and you find out that information. You'd be surprised how many people are going to be released and they don't even have a house, halfway house acceptance, but you know, they don't even try.
Well, I have three, sir, and one of them happens to be my own faith's halfway house, and I'm choosing, rather than go to my own faith's halfway house, to try to get into the Milestones because it's a better program than the one that my own church provides.
That's good. And you're to be congratulated on the research. That's something that can make a huge difference in how well you can reintegrate with the community. So, at this point, you know, as a lot of times less victims show up or send letters, you have no idea where they went, what happened, or anything else like that. Do you have any idea what were the gentlemen you stabbed into that?
Yes, sir, I do.
Where did he end up?
Well, after my conviction, he moved to San Diego with his daughter and her children. And in the course of 4 or 5 years, he turned around and molested her children.
Okay. That is quite a shame. Looks like you've done quite a bit on your programming and, you know, classes, and you hear it all the time. Nothing's available. And we understand the priority for lifers are on the back of the list and everything, but it seems like you managed to get a whole lot of programming, and even as a lifer, and a lot of that is from the outside sources. And so I congratulate you. So you've got quite a spectrum of classes, you know, with bookkeeping, ornamental horticulture, landscaping technology, vehicle maintenance. It sounds like you could go out and start your own community, sir, and you handle all of the specialty jobs. That's pretty good.
You still there?
Yes.
As far as the education, you know, I'm looking long term. I'm looking at what's going to be available when I get out there. What opportunities I'm going to have. You know, I watch people in here every day. They take one set of courses and they bank their life on that one thing. The fact is, nobody knows what's going to be available out there, and unless you have the knowledge, a wide spectrum of knowledge, then you're not going to be able to get the job done. You're not going to be able to find a job that'll function. You know, a whole lot of people, they sit in prison all day long and they think, I'm a convict, I got nothing coming. Well, that kind of thinking, are you still there?
Yeah, we're here.
Okay, that kind of thinking, in my opinion, is faulty. If you convince yourself that you have nothing coming, then you're not going to try to improve yourself in order to better your options. My whole focus was learning anything and everything that I could so that whatever chance came available, I'd have an option. I kind of looked at it like this. If it comes to shoveling dirt out of an irrigation ditch, I'm going to have a job. I don't believe people get ahead in life unless they plan, and that's why I've taken as much education as I have.
Well, it's good. It's, I'm a firm believer that that you always have to keep learning. And
never stop.
Right. If you don't, and my philosophy is, if you don't learn something new every day, you're done. And people look at this, young people especially, like, oh, well, you got to learn something every day. Well, did you meet somebody today? Yeah. Well, you learned the name. You know, you're sort of driving down the street, somebody cuts you off, you might learn a new word. Anyway, I really do like want to congratulate you on your educational life spectrum and your way of thinking, because you're right, you don't know what's coming. But there are people that have God lined up, if they usually it's family or somebody they knew before they went in. That kind of deal, but you know, coming out after the length of time you get in, if you're right, if an inmate thinks that, hey, I don't have anything when they get out there, then they're not. I am going to see if my full board members have any questions at this time. Mr. Cannell.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Mr. Siegfried?
Yes.
I just have a follow-up question. It looks like that you have pretty limited discipline in Ames. And am I correct that you didn't have a ticket that has really stuck since 2005?
That's correct.
All right, so that was a minimum for disobeying an order?
Yes, I actually have three tickets that were in result guilty.
Earlier than that, or when?
Earlier than that. The last one that was guilty was 2005, January, I believe.
Okay. Thank you. That's the way I'm interpreting it, but I certainly want to commend you for having limited discipline and the personal involvement that you've made inside the Department of Corrections. It also looks like that you have, and I think it appears a provisional release date, correct, of 2021?
Yes, February 1st.
The question that I have is, just in context, with some respect to your rights and another part of the criminal justice system, do you still have some sort of pending action in the criminal justice system, in the courts?
In what respect? With my
appeal? You made reference to your counsel and a gag order, and I wasn't sure if there was something else happening. I'm not going to ask you questions that are inappropriate, but do you have some sort of movement for a retrial or something of that nature?
At this time, I'm not going to answer that question, other than to say that there is a petition in development that cannot be filed until after I'm released.
Okay. And I'm not asking you for any more than what you said. It sounded like maybe you had something in motion out there. And that certainly helps me understand where you're at. Personally, as you continue with your prison sentence, but certainly I do want to say that we take everything into consideration, and I sense some frustration in you, which I don't judge. I just sense it, and so if nothing else, I want you to hear some encouragement, because I am impressed with your education, with the education that you pursued, and that you have a pretty good history of discipline inside the Department of Corrections. So thank you, Mr. Siegfried.
Thank you, Mr. Kamos. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. Sir, do you have private a bit of information and programming that you took. You also have some letters in here. And I was trying to see if there were some more recent letters in there. Did you have any recent letters that were submitted?
One more time, sir. I had a hard time hearing that.
Any recent letters that were submitted in support for yourself? And I could have missed it, but I was going through here trying to see. You have some letters in your file, sir, that over the years that have been submitted on your behalf and supported you. I was trying to see if there were any recent ones.
I'm not exactly sure what letters you're referring to, sir.
There's some letters in support of you of your being released.
You're talking about the letters from my mother and my father?
Yes,
the letters from the church members?
Yes, sir.
Okay, what would you like to know about those?
No, I was only asking, sir. The ones I see were old. I was asking, is there a reason why there hasn't been any recent ones?
Well, I guess because when you're in the process of preparing a parole packet, you get them together ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
And you get them notarized because you don't have to do it 10 times. I didn't get any recent ones because I wasn't too impressed by my first parole hearing. My second parole hearing, there's people on this board that remember what I said last year. I didn't come to that second hearing with any belief that I'd have a chance to get now. I know that my mother was planning on being at this hearing today. Unfortunately, on the 8th of December, she was out moving wood, firewood in her property and got bit by a brown recluse, and so she's got some major medical issues right now and couldn't be here.
Okay, well, that's the reason. I mean, that's understandable, so I'm just, you know, trying to get an understanding and see if people are still feeling the same way.
Their phone numbers are all on the letter, sir, and they were put there for a reason. I can't call them myself. I haven't made a phone call in 12 years. But you're welcome to call them if you want.
Okay. So one other question that I have, did you serve time in prison previously to this?
Yes, sir, I did.
Okay, because when did you get released?
May 10th, 1990.
Okay, so actually you had been before this board on a prison. What were you in prison on before, sir?
An armed robbery that occurred when I was 17 years old.
Okay, all right, thank you, sir.
Dr. Ray?
Yes, sir. Just real simple questions. We'll take note that you've already discussed this with the Honorable Mr. Neal, but you said that you would wish to reside at Milestone Halfway House. Why did you select that one, sir, aside from it being faith-based? What do you know about that particular halfway house that attracted you to it, sir?
Well, actually, the structure of the halfway house, the way they manage the people that stay there, sir. You know, so many halfway houses, they put you in a room and they let you run wild. Halfway houses are freaking havens for dope fiends. Half of the halfway houses are on Doe Valley. If it's not on the property, it's just around the corner. I don't have an alcohol or drug problem. Haven't had an alcohol or drug problem in 27 years. Haven't taken an aspirin in 12 years. Those things don't bother me, but I like structure. I've always liked structure, and I think that the only way that I'm going to stay in line is to have continued structure. So going out there and making sure that I choose a place that's going to give me that structure is what I set out to do.
So how did you become acquainted with this particular halfway house, sir?
I was referred to it by a prison chaplain.
Yes, sir. That's a plus. Yes, sir. And you stated something to the effect, and this is not a quote, paraphrasing what I think I heard you say, is that you selected this halfway house over one that was that might be available from your religious connections. When you say your religious connections, are you is everything faith-based at this time in your thinking, sir, or are you? I don't want to get into your religion unless you want to, but is it faith-based, everything that you look at for your future, sir, is going to be faith-based, sir?
Absolutely, sir. I'm a Seventh-day Adventist, and I have been since 1997.
And that's an outstanding faith-based denomination, Seventh-day Adventist, and I commend you on that. What do you plan to do out once you get out? See, I'm always going to be positive. I don't know when it's going to occur, but when you get out, what do you plan to do as it relates to your faith base? Do you plan to be an active member, or do you plan to help others? What do you plan to do, sir?
Well, like I said, the halfway house that I want to go to, Milestones, is a faith-based organization. decision that focuses the large majority of its program on service to others. They don't allow you to have a job for the first 6 to 12 months that you're there, because they put you to work every day doing things for other nonprofits, for the community. The actual halfway house is owned and operated by the city of Phoenix. It's my understanding that sometimes you'll be picking up trash on the streets because that's what you've been assigned to do, and that's giving back to the community. My own church, we have a branch right down the street from where this halfway house is, about a mile and a half. So on Saturdays, I can go and attend church at my own facility and give back to that community as well, the same as they've given to me for the last 21 years.
I appreciate you sharing that with me, because my next question was going to be, what is this halfway house? But you shared that with me. I just happen not to be familiar with that, but I'm familiar with a number, and as you say, some of them are good and some of them are not so good. So you've done your research on this particular halfway house.
They're on Grand Avenue at like 3210 Grand Avenue.
And your church, your Sunday Adventist church, is in that same area, am I correct, sir?
Right. It's at 43rd Avenue and Indian School, I believe.
Okay. I was just talking with someone this weekend who attended that particular church. That's the only reason I was asking about that one, sir. You made progress, that's to be sure. But there are certain things that, and I'm not, and by no means I'm not pushing no issue, no one to end no discussion with you, but you still feel that there are certain things that you cannot say to this board because of some things that might be, might come up in the future, as you indicated to the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis just before I spoke. So there are some things that you just not available to talk to us about as it relates to the past or maybe even the future. Am I correct, sir?
Well, anything that has to do with legal, I won't discuss any pending petitions, but if you have questions, feel free to ask them. If I can answer them, I'll answer them.
I guess I'm still trying to, and I think you already said that you were not going to get into this. I'm still trying to see, related to the Honorable Mr. Neal at the beginning, that you didn't want to talk about the offense itself and that took place, and I know that was a number of years ago, and is there anything at all that you can tell this board about the offense or refresh our memory, because as you stated, some of us have heard you before, I don't know if all of us heard you before, but I know some of us have. Is there anything about the crime itself that you could share with the board that might benefit the board in terms of making a decision, sir?
I guess my question would be, if you want specifics, ask, sir. If I can answer your questions, I will. Do you want to know how many times he was gone? What? I mean, I don't
yes,
know
sir,
what
it is. Things of that nature. How many times he was gone? What was going? What was really going on at that particular time? What were you involved? You know, this type of information that can be helpful in terms of making the board making a determination, or me as a board member making a determination, because I can't speak for any other board member, as you know, and no other board member can speak for me. But I think that the more I know, the better I'll be in a position to make an informed decision, sir. That's the only thing that I'm trying to ask, sir, without creating any problems legally that you might have pending somewhere, sir.
I was involved, sir, because that drunk killer was touching my nephew. I was involved because I still to this day don't believe that I could have lived with myself if I had allowed that man to continue doing what he was doing. That doesn't make it right. It doesn't make the choice that I made right. It doesn't take away the serious and grave bodily harm that I committed to that man.
Did you say he was touching what? Touching the nephew? Or what? Who was he touching, sir?
That's exactly what I said, sir.
Okay. And then you felt And I think you said it before, I'm just trying to put it all in perspective in terms of chronological order. About how old was your nephew at that time, sir?
6 years old.
6 years old. And he was sexually touching your nephew. And you indicated that, I don't want you to have to repeat what you already said, but I just want to make sure I understood that your nephew never fully recovered from this, that he went to somewhere in California, but he still had some challenges because of this incident that had taken place, sir. Am I correct, sir?
No, sir. My nephew did not go to California.
Oh, he did not? Okay.
My nephew grew up and left this country and became an expatriated citizen of this country because he was not completely happy with the justice that was handed down to his relatives over this incident.
And that's because of your being incarcerated, among other things, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And how old was he when he became an expatriate from America, sir?
A little over 18 years old.
Okay, and so all of this was still in his mind, and he made a determination that the justice system did not work appropriately in your case and maybe others. Okay, thank you so much. Thank you so very much, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. I don't know. I think this, in my mind, for me, this is appropriate. But the question is just is this: How is your nephew doing today?
Well, he's a international attorney. He works out of Copenhagen. He's happy. He's getting married in a couple of months. He rants and raves every time I hear from him by letter. He rants and raves about what he thinks of the United States and specifically Arizona. So I would imagine he's doing good. At least he has his capacities and can think for himself.
Do you have any intention of reuniting with him for a visit to a hug, whatever? When you are released?
Well, it's my understanding, sir, that I can't apply for a visa to get to leave and go somewhere else until after I'm off parole, and my nephew has no intention of coming back to this country, so if that's to occur, it'll probably have to occur well after I'm completely off paper.
Okay, but it's a possibility.
Oh, absolutely. His mother and I and him are in constant contact.
But it sounds like he's doing well, too, and that's probably the biggest issue here anyway. When you've got kids involved, it's the fact that he's been able to move on with his life and be a success in life. That's very important.
He's doing well enough to be the guy who's working on the petition that I intend to file after I'm released.
Wow. Well, that's, a lot of things that sound good. I do. Okay, I think Mr. Canales has a Mr. Canales has another question for you,
Mr. Siegfried?
Yes, sir?
I have a question. It's not critical. It's not argumentative. And how you feel about it, I can take it. But I am kind of curious. And I respect the strong feelings that may be associated with this case, especially if your nephew was a victim. But what does he think would have happened differently in Denmark's system that didn't happen here?
I'm not exactly sure what he thinks is going to happen there. It's kind of my opinion that justice everywhere sucks.
Well, I said I would take it, and I do appreciate all of you being. It is not an argumentative question, but it does, if he's operating in a different criminal justice system, It did raise the question, and I was thinking perhaps maybe shorter prison sentences or different types of rehabilitation, but I do appreciate your response. Thank you, Mr. Sinfield.
Mr. Neal.
If I can add something, he told me one time that he felt better there because as an immigrant in that country, he knew he had nothing coming, and he knew he had nothing to expect. Whereas here, where he was supposed to have rights, and where his family was supposed to have rights, he couldn't rely on what he was supposed to have coming.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Ms. Rittenhouse, I have another question.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Seifert, this is just a practical question, and that is, if this board were to release you on parole to halfway house, one of the requirements is the Department of Corrections requires that you have at least 2 months' worth of money, of funds saved up to cover 2 months of living expenses. Do you have that?
First and foremost, the halfway house that I'm going to doesn't require you to pay living expenses. I have what's on my DDA account, and within reason, I have access to funds through my mother. I'd like to point out that my mother's on retirement living, and she's not made of money, and I wouldn't ask her for tons of money anyway, but she's certainly willing to assist within limits.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Any other questions from the board? Okay, sir. We're nearing the end of your hearing at this time, and the board will go into discussion and make a determination shortly. But before we do that, we'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. Tell us anything else you think might be put into our decision today. I will say that as one voting board member, I do understand your frustration, but I also appreciate that as we went through the hearing, you opened up a little bit more, and we were able to get a better picture. So, is there anything else you'd like to add, sir?
Sir, I'm not exactly sure what else I could add. I mean, if you have specific questions on what you'd like me to say, that's fine, but...
Okay, well, that's, you know, that's your right. Some people wind it up like a campaign speech, and other people express it during the course of the hearing. So that's fine, sir. We do thank you for your responses today. We're going to be going into the discussion to make a determination. We'll be talking amongst ourselves. You may think we're addressing you, but we won't be. But stay on the phone. Just remain silent. You can hear the entire discussion. And once we've made a determination, I'll get back with you. Okay, sir?
I'll be here.
Okay. Every so often, you put in, you interject something that makes us all smile. That's good. Okay, the board is now in discussion. This is a very interesting case. Like some of the scenarios you see in TV show, where there's a mystery on the side. I got a pretty good picture of the motivations behind what happened in this. I'm very impressed with Mr. Dyson's education. I'm very impressed with his reasoning for the type of education, various things that he got. That's a good way of thinking. That's somebody that is hardwired to survive and that can be very successful in the community. I'm also very impressed with his decision after researching things to take a faith-based halfway house as his preferred means of reintegration, and I have not heard the milestones,
I know that most of the halfway houses are the faith-based. At some period of time, they don't allow work, outside work. They sometimes I think some of the residents would rather work out an outside job than do what the halfway house has for them, because they keep busy. I mean, it's not degrading or anything else like that, but, you know, I hear some, I'll just say, attitude in Mr. Seifert's voice as we go along with things, but I also noticed that he came over to ask where this is going along, and some of the resentment and attitude went away, but I can also understand, you know, the time he's in there, there can be some, but I think by the end of the hearing, it was, everything was pretty open and everybody was getting along well. I must say that at this point in time, I would be very much in favor of home arrest for Mr. Seifert. Not really for absolute discharge, but home arrest. And then with the restrictions that the halfway house they have on that, it actually should work out fairly well. It is, can be a hindrance in their planning on where they wanted to work, but we've had other home arrests come back in and talk about how it's been you know, worked out. But I'd like to hear some discussion from my fellow board members. Mr. Canone.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. For the sake of discussion, and we often give the preface as one voting board member, so as one voting board member, I certainly do look at cases differently with a life sentence when there is a life sentence, because it's a statement from the justice system about the nature of the crime. And while I recognize that this was a pretty serious sentence, it does have a firm end date. And so I look forward to the development of the individual and as to whether we can safely transition into the community, whether it'll be productive. And I have to say, again, not as a psychologist, but I couldn't help but notice that he may have his reasons for why this crime was committed, but I find more than cognizant. There's some ownership in the crime. He didn't try to justify the crime in itself, and he did it in a way that I found very convincing. And like you, I'd be supportive of a home arrest scenario. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Canunas. Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I want to be brief and say I appreciate the way Mr. Seifert has prepared himself with options. In case one fails, then he's got a backup of, you know, several backups, it sounds like. And specifically with regards to opposition from the county attorney, we do have a letter, but it's old, that they didn't resubmit, and the letter we have is from 2016. So, you know, recognition there was a victim in this crime, or as Mr. Seifert says, there were two victims in this crime, but we haven't heard any recent opposition, so I would also be in favor, sir.
Mr. Johnson, do you have anything?
I'm still on the fence, and a couple of reasons I'm on the fence. Yes, he's made good progress, and I believe that he will. I know that he will get out at some point in the future, and I'm convinced of that. And I think he will be deserving of that. But a couple of things that still in the back of my mind, and one is this particular halfway house, which is his preference. I've just never heard of it before, and I would like to know more about that halfway house. It's just me and one board member, and I'm also concerned about the possible legal actions that might be pending once he is, what he says, or when he's released, that he will file that, but I'm concerned about that as well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. I think I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to grant Mr. James site plan agency number 055339 grant home arrest and deny record parole or absolute discharge at this time.
Second.
Agree.
Disagree.
Motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Quinones. Agreed by Mr. Johnson. Mr. Johnson disagreed by Johnson. Sure, Mr. Seifried, is it Seifried or Siegfried?
Siegfried, sir.
Siegfried. I'm sorry, I had a really good friend that spelled it exactly the same way in the he pronounced it Seifried, so.
Excuse me, sir.
Oh, no, that's
Can I clarify something?
Yes, sir.
First, I would like to clarify that I was not issued a life sentence.
Oh, no. I think that the reference was not. Was meant that we hear a lot of these that have a life sentence, so there's no specific end date. Mr. Quinones did mention that, you know, that it is a hard end date.
Right.
You know, that we're looking at. So that wasn't an issue. So, and I just wanted to apologize for mispronouncing your name, which is not.
Right.
Yeah, so.
It happens all the time, don't worry about it.
All right, we like to get it right.
Okay, the second thing I'd like to clarify is the gentleman said that he wasn't familiar with Milestones. Milestones is a program that's run by Church on the Streets.
Okay, well, when you gave the location, I've kind of imagined what was down there other than Church on the Streets location. You know, as far as the halfway house. So they actually are related?
It's in the Church on the Streets building right there.
Okay.
On the ground.
All right. Okay, well, and you know, the thing is, we don't always hear the names of all the programs until the first time they come up. You know, it's like, anytime you look for something, it's always the last place you look. And so some of this stuff is the first time we've heard about it, and we, because there is a lot of problems within the halfway houses out there, we would, you know, we'd like to have a little information, and I think that what you just said would clear it up, but
I think Milestones also calls themselves Dream Center.
Okay. Well, the board voted to grant you home arrest this time, sir. Now, it's it takes a little, some processing, so, you know, they'll have to verify that you can go to that location and everything else, so it may take a few weeks before you're actually released, but when you go on home arrest, you're going to have an ankle bracelet. You're going to have very, 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 very strict rules. And with those halfway houses like you're going to, that is a big plus because it's a lot harder to break the itinerary rules.
I understand, sir. I've had an imaginary ankle bracelet on for the last 25 and a half years, so it's fun.
Yeah. Did it beep at you when it needed recharging?
Yeah.
Okay, sir. But really, with home arrest, it is very, very strict. And sometimes with those halfway houses where you're working at their direction, it can be difficult because if they can't assign you work a week in advance, it's hard to get your itinerary set up. But they do work at trying to make everything work so that you can be reintegrated and not violated, okay?
Right. It's my understanding that this halfway house has a full-on kitchen and other services that actually happen right in the facility, so
right.
I'm sure that
right. Yeah, that'd be, so, it's, you know, but sometimes it initially gets to be a hassle to get it set up, but we do issue the best of luck. Probably about 6 months after you're released in that neighborhood, you'll be scheduled for another board hearing. You'll come back and we'll talk to you again, and hopefully at that time you'll be moving forward and making progress instead of stepping backwards. But remember, don't get discouraged either, because the parole officers will work really hard with you. And at first it may seem like you're taking two steps forward and one step back, or one step forward and two steps back, but keep at it, because things have changed a lot outside since you were out in the community. Same technology, even the cars, some of the cars now stop on their own if they think you're going to hit somebody. So take it easy, go slow, and be successful. Okay, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right, would you put the CO3 back on the phone?
I'm here right now. I just walked in the double countdown.
Okay.
Thank you so very much. Is there anything else that you have for us at your unit today?
That will be it, sir. Thank you.
Hold on one second. What was his question
for you? Before we leave the hearing, we didn't discuss the conditions of home arrest.
Well, we should have not.
The original CO3 has to go teach a class. I'm CO3 Smith.
Okay, well, could you be kind enough to put Mr. Sickery back on the system?
He just went back to the middle ground. It's almost count time. We gotta be in the house for count. I understand that. He's ready to eat. But we'll take more than a minute or so. Okay, well, we should bring that back, but the CO3 that was originally in here, he had to go teach a class, so I stepped in to finish this call up for him.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, here he is.
I'm sorry, sir. I thought you were finished.
I did too. It's my fault. Okay, I'm going to go over the conditions of release that are very specific. So you have to follow all the mandatory DOC conditions and sanctions, and that's a point I did forget. You are still considered an inmate when you're on home arrest, so you really don't have quite the freedom of somebody that's on regular parole. Okay? So just remember that as you go along, and follow all those rules. No alcohol use, random tests for drug and alcohol. I don't think you'd be deported, so that one's probably not. At first, we're going to say may not operate a motor vehicle.
I don't plan to drive, sir.
And I'm going to list Milestone's halfway house as a recommended halfway house, and they'll work on all of the verifications. No victim contact.
The victim is deceased.
Okay, but yeah, but must pay restitution per whatever the court order said on it as far as their times. Abide any institutional rules that might come up. And when I say partake in available programming, you have a lot of education, but there are programs. You don't have an alcohol problem, but the example is like, you know, some people need 12-step. Your PO may recommend certain kinds of programming that will help you reintegrate. So if something's recommended, you have to do it, okay?
I understand, sir.
All right. So supervision, and then the supervision fees are $65 a month. It starts 60 days after you are released. And your PO will discuss that with you, okay?
I understand, sir.
All right, well, I think that covers it all. And again, I wish you the best of luck, and I'll be looking forward to seeing you in about 6 months to see how well you do, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, don't miscount now. So, all right, talk to you later. Thank you.
All right.